Good morning. This morning I want to talk about something Dogen teaches in a fascicle called Jinzu in the Shobogenzo, which means, Jinzu means mystical power. So what is mystical power in Soto Zen? So that's what this is about. Dogen said, mystical power as it is the tea and meals of Buddhists. And the Buddhas to the present have not tired of it. In it, there are six mystical powers, and there is the one mystical power. There is a state of being without mystical power, and there is the supremely ascended mystical power. Its embodiment is 3,000 acts in the morning and 800 acts in the evening. That's how this fascicle opens. So traditionally, the spiritual powers of a Buddha are paranormal physical powers. And the standard list is of the ability to manifest mentally produced images of one's body, in other words, to show up somewhere else as yourself, to disappear, to pass through solid objects, to enter the earth, to walk on water, to fly, to touch the sun and moon, to ascend to the heavens of Brahman, and the abilities to cause the earth to shake and produce fire and water from the sides of one's body. And those, that's often included in the list. So that's pretty wild and crazy stuff, right? Mental telepathy, the ability to discern the state of mind of others, and especially their spiritual state. So, I mean, you know, these are pretty powerful. Perhaps useful. I don't know. Perhaps useful. Being able to teleport yourself somewhere else. You know, sitting around watching TV. I think I'll go to New Leaf and pick up a few things, you know. Whether or not they come back with you, I don't know. But this is not the mystical power that Dogen's referring to. So what is he talking about when he talks about mystical powers? What are these 3,000 acts in the morning and 800 acts in the evening? So what he does in Jinzu is he talks about kind of a koan. So I'm going to tell you that koan that he starts out this fascicle with. It's called Master Guishan's Exploring Spiritual Powers. This also appears in Dogen's Shobogenzo Shinjin, which is a 300 koan collection that he amassed. So here's the case. One day, Master Guishan was lying down, probably sleeping, when his student Yangshan came into his room. Master Guishan turned over and lay facing the wall because, and this is how Suzuki Roshi tells the story, because he didn't want to be caught napping. The teacher didn't want to be caught napping. But Yangshan said, "I'm your student. You don't need to be formal with me." So Guishan sat up. But at that point, Yangshan had already started to leave the room, and Guishan called out and he said, "Yangshan," like that. And Yangshan turned his head. Having called Yangshan back, Guishan said, "Listen to this old monastic's dream." So I think maybe he had been asleep. "Listen to this old monastic's dream." Yangshan lowered his head and was ready to listen. And then Guishan just said, "Interpret my dream for me. Let me see how you do it." Yangshan immediately brought Master Guishan a basin of water and a towel, and Guishan washed his face. Thereupon, Zhang Yang, another student of Master Guishan, came into the room. Guishan said, "I have been having a mystical communication with Yangshan. It's no small thing." Yangshan said, "Well, I overheard you." Guishan said in response, "Now you try it, and I will see if you got it." So then Yangshan made a bowl of tea and brought it to him. Guishan sighed and praised them both, saying, "You two students surpass even Shariputra and Moggallāyāna, who are both major disciples of the Buddha. So, like, what's going on here? You know, Guishan's asleep, his disciple comes in, Guishan gets up, he says, oh, listen to this old monastic's dream. So we think we're going to hear, you know, about this dream. And he also, in some versions of it, it says, you know, will you interpret my dream for me? And then Yangshan gets his ready to listen, and Guishan says, interpret my dream for me, let me see how you do it. And then Yangshan immediately brings him a basin of water and a towel to wash his face, maybe his hands. And then the other student, who's kind of hanging out in the hallway, listening through the shoji screen, Yang Yan, he says, oh yeah, okay, I can do this too. And he goes and brings him some tea, probably brings tea for all three of them. This is the embodiment of the 3,000 acts in the morning and the 800 acts in the evening. So, what's this koan about? So, one thing I think about this koan is that it's kind of a red herring. A lot of koans are. It's like you're not dealt the full deck, you know? But what happens here is that when his disciple enters the room, perhaps Master Guishan decides that he's going to test him a little bit. He's going to test his understanding about how he needs to respond. So he asks Yangshan to listen to the dream, but then Yangshan brings him this bowl of water and a towel. What this is about is it's about the three of them ultimately having this interaction in which everyone is in attune with each other, in which the student susses out what the teacher needs, in which the teacher understands, or wants to find out perhaps, understands what the teacher needs, but also perhaps the teacher wants to understand what the student knows. So this way in which there's this intimate interaction. Sleeping is very intimate. So your student is there, comes into the room while you're asleep. And so in a way, that's very much like my, you know, the teacher's not, you know, I remember one time with my teacher, Mel Weitzman, we were at Tassajara, and I remember coming in and seeing him sleeping, you know, in the tatami mat room where he stayed in his cabin. And that felt very intimate, you know, like, and also kind of surprising because your teachers, I don't know, they're not supposed to sleep. You're not supposed to catch them napping, you know. And you go, oh, there's my teacher having a nap. Like, what's the problem? You know, so it, in a way, it's a very intimate thing. And, but what, you know, in this example, Yangshan knew his teacher really closely. He knew Master Guishan, and he probably knew that Master Guishan would want to wash his face before he told about his dream. And the other student knew that Master Guishan would probably want tea before he told the dream, before he interpreted the dream. So what this is talking about is it's talking about how we are able to understand what's happening in a situation and respond to that situation appropriately, in which we're able to take into account the totality of what's happening, the people who are present in this case, what we know about those people in this case, what we know about each other, and perhaps what we know about the kind of way things are done, right? Maybe the way things were done in that monastery was when you got up from nap, you washed your face and your hands. You had a cup of tea. Maybe that's the way they did that. So the point is that they understood that and were able to respond appropriately. That's the magic. That's what Dogen's calling the magic. In some ways, that's what our practice is. That's like the whole ball of wax of our practice, is that how do we respond to every situation that we encounter in a skillful way? that's inclusive of self and other. That's realized action. How do we do that? Here's another story that Dogen tells from a different text called the Ehekoroku. And that's the record of Ehe Dogen, the record of Dogen. Ehe is one of Dogen's names. Now, I just want to read this to you the way he wrote it, because I think it's really beautiful. It's nice to hear Dogen's voice. On the 25th day of the fifth month, the rainy season downpour had continued for several days, and the grass roofs of the Zendo were leaking. When this mountain monk Dogen entered the hall to do zazen, in the place where two roofs met, waves poured all over the floor. So it's raining pretty hard. Monks of the Pure Ocean Assembly, when coming or going, were caught at a standstill there. You can imagine, it's like here the two roofs come together, and there's just a sheet of water just kind of pouring down. Everybody's standing there like, ah, I don't want to get my ropes wet. How am I going to get through this water? So everything's come to a screeching halt. Zazen is not happening. Water's coming down. Monks of the Pure Ocean Assembly, when coming or going, were caught at a standstill there. When work leader Eun was informed of the leak, he removed his robes and, without a rain hat, together with carpenters, climbed up to the roof and took care of the leak. This is the work leader. So he just immediately sussed out what the problem was, took off his robes so they wouldn't get wet, got together with the local carpenters, and they fixed the roof. Although the dense rainfall burst on his head, he did not hesitate. I quietly had the thought to write him some words in praise, although at that time I simply watched him sympathetically. Since then, 6 months have passed, but it has been difficult to forget what he did. This work leader's example is exactly the bones and marrow of previous Buddhas. Without being stopped by concern for self, the bones and marrows of previous Buddhas. You know, often we want to make practice about specialness. We want to make practice some kind of special activity. Maybe we don't aspire to walking through walls. Maybe we don't aspire to transporting your body somewhere else. Although I have to admit, when I first started spiritual practice, not Soto Zen, but reading mainly about the Tibetans, you know, I was thinking, gee, can I learn to fast walk, teleport my body, you know, astral travel, do all those things? It didn't work out, I have to say. I'm just, you know. So there's this way in which he says, this is the bones and marrow of previous Buddhas. This action, this response to what's needed, without being stopped for concern for self. Such is this respected disciple's diligent power, which delights many. So this diligent power is this mystical power that Dogen's talking about in Jinzu. Moreover, this temple is on a far distant road that cannot be reached by people who are not serious. This is our practice. In some ways, it is like a temple in a far distant road that cannot be reached unless we are serious about our practice. Only lofty people shouldering the heavy baggage of sincere aspiration arrive one at a time, strong and determined heroes, departing from conventions and entering the grasses of Dharma inquiry. Their minds delighting in what they hear, they all grasp for the unsettled deeds, seeking to compete for ancestral fields. So this way in which we seek, I don't know about the competition part, but the way in which we seek to understand what is the path, what is the Buddha way, what is the teaching of those who came before us, how does it apply to my life, how can I bring this forth, well, how can I understand the nature of these Buddha mystical powers, how can I understand the nature of what it says to say this is the bones and marrows of the Buddhist practice. Sometimes manifesting in the form of asuras. So asuras are very fierce being, sometimes manifesting in the form of asuras, sometimes endowed with a thousand hands and eyes. So that's Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. So it's not just all about, there's also a kind of fierceness to this. There's a way of being a warrior in the midst of this as well. Sometimes manifesting in the form of asuras, sometimes endowed with a thousand hands and eyes, they transmit dharma and succeed to the ancestors. Who would say that this work of Eun does not have the ability of a capable person? A capable person is someone who's realized. So who would say that this work leader does not have the ability of an enlightened person? And by the way, there are no enlightened people, there are enlightened responses. I think Suzuki Roshi said that. So we're not aspiring to somehow be something different than we already are, some person, ethereal person, who is enlightened in some kind of permanent state. What we're seeking is that we're able to really respond to our life just as it is in a way that's skillful and helpful and appropriate. That's the practice realization of our school. Although there are phrases about serving the assembly and exerting power, what phrase could I give him? What when he stirs, he definitely hits 100%. So this person, this capable person, when he acts, this work leader, when he acted in fixing the roof, he acted and hit the mark 100%. When he acts, it is completely accomplished. So this is another place where Dogen talks about Jinzu, mystical power. This mystical power of response, pure response to what's happening. So this is another example that Dogen gives about mystical power. So we have these two examples. One is this way in which the student-teacher relationship, this deep intimacy between the student and the teachers, this interconnection, if you will, this interbeing that comes from this real closeness, spending time with each other, being with each other. We have that kind of an example. As human beings, we are very intimate with each other. So there are times that we have an intimacy with each other that's like the three of them, Guishan and his two students, which seems like would probably be our kind of classical definition of intimacy, a kind of partnership, a kind of doing things together, a kind of being together, a kind of way in which we walk in on each other while we're napping, you know. But actually, all of humanity is also this intimate relationship. All of humanity, we also deeply share the sameness and intimacy. I was talking to someone the other day who was reading a book called something like A Brief History of the Human Beings. And in this book it says, I think it's like, in our DNA there's like only three genes that are different between human beings that determine what we consider to be differences out of thousands and thousands, right? So there's this way in which we have this propensity to key in on these actually extraordinarily minor differences that we see because the color of our skin is different, or maybe our eyes are shaped a different way. All those kind of external things that we key in on as being different, but actually those are so minor when you look at the totality of what makes us human beings. That actually, as human beings, we share far more with each other. I mean, it's a minuscule amount that we don't share with each other, and far more that we do share. That sharing is our intimacy. That sharing is this way in which Guishan and his two students are having this intimate relationship with each other as human beings. And that's how we find this way to be able to respond to each other that's skillful, because we come back to that place. It doesn't mean, by the way, that we're all going to join hands and sing Kumbaya together. Would that it were so. You know, we're going to have differences with each other, but our ability to work with those differences has to do with remembering our sameness. This is also true for the rest of the world. It's true for insects. I mean, it's our relationship. I don't know how ants relate to ants. I have a lot of them in my house right now. So far, I've not become an ant whisperer. But I do see them, and I say, oh, you know, it's like that ant, if it could speak to me like I would speak, would say, please don't step on me, you know. And yet, there's a way in which I find that my food, I say, okay, guys, you know. So this way that this intimacy radiates out as well. It's not just about people. It's about things. It's about everything that we relate to in our lives. This is this mystical power, and it is a mystical power. This mystical power to be able to find our empathy and compassion, be sympathetic to, find those connections that we have with each other when other parts of our mind and body are going like, no, I don't want to do that. No. And yet this other Buddha nature, this part of ourselves, this capable person, this practitioner, this warrior, this person who goes through the road and finds that monastery up in the mountain, this person who perseveres says, yes, my true nature says, yes, I'm going to make this effort. 100%. How do we cultivate this jinzu? How do we cultivate this mystical power? So another text by Dogen is called the Tenso Kyokun, which is instructions for the cook that he wrote. And so it's really a wonderful text. I think the current translation of it is called In the Zen Kitchen by Uchiyama Roshi, translated by Shoha Okamura. It's a wonderful book. I really encourage everybody to read it. I'm sure you can find it used. So Dogen talks about cooking, but what I'm going to talk about is what he has to say about cooking that is applicable to this question that we should ask ourselves, which is, how do we actually do this thing, right? How do we actually do this practice? How do we cultivate these magical, mystical power here? So here's kind of a laundry list of what he says. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you that list, and then next week I'm going to talk more about, in detail, about the list. So one approach is a willingness to exert our utmost effort in practice. So it requires of us that we make effort. Darn. You know? The aim of this effort is to find what is, and as he says, Dogen says, appropriate to the need of the situation, and that will enable everyone to practice with their bodies and minds with the least hindrance. Everyone to practice. It's not talking about everyone to practice Buddhism, but everyone to be able to be the best that they can be, if you want to say it that way. A practice that encourages people to want to make their best effort, to be skillful. He said, you must do the work yourself. No one else can do it. He's talking to the cook here. He says, you have to roll up your sleeves and go into the kitchen. You have to go into the kitchen and start cooking. So we have to do this work ourselves. You have to be present for your life and the work, paying close attention. The only place that we can do this work is in our own lives. We have to pay close attention to our relationships. We have to take care of our relationships, but we also have to look at the difficult parts of our life and say, how can I apply my practice to this? How can I make this? It's not about good or bad, like I'm bad, I'm good. It's more like what's workable. So it becomes like not like an indictment of the self, but just, how can I do this better? How can this be more workable? We have to take responsibility for our practice. Dogen says we should not be critical of our circumstances, since every moment is a moment in which we can practice. So this, in this way, that we often we say, oh, I can't practice right now because of this. I can't practice right now because it's his fault, right? So I don't have to practice because they're the ones. But this way in which every situation is an opportunity to practice. Or I can't practice now because I can't sit now, Zazen now, because there's somebody cleaning the roof. You know, those are not optimal situations for me to meditate, so I'm not going to do it at all. So this way in which we are always looking for the perfect circumstance. Treat every person, everything in your life like Buddha. That's a nice koan. What in the world does that mean? Treat everything as Buddha. Use the practice and wisdom of the ancestors, teachers, and Sangha to be your inspirational star. Look to those who have come before. All Buddhas and ancestors are human beings. Hui Shan and his students, they're human beings. We can relate to that story. We can understand what happened in that situation. We certainly relate to the work leader. And we can relate to the times when we say to ourselves, I don't want to go up on the roof and fix that. I know it's my job, but I don't want to be the one to go up and do that. I'm going to get wet. I might fall off the roof. You know, this way in which we're presented with these opportunities throughout our day. And then Dogen says this. We remain unclear about our practice because our minds go racing about like horses running wild in the fields. Our emotions remain unmanageable, like monkeys swinging from the trees. If only we would step back to carefully reflect on the horse and monkey, our lives would naturally become one with our work. So this is our horse, our monkey. Doing so is the means whereby we turn things, even while simultaneously we are being turned by them. I'll make that a teaser for next week. What does that mean? Where things, even while simultaneously we are being turned by them, even as we turn things. It is vital that we clarify and harmonize our lives with our work and not lose sight of either the absolute or the practical. And then he says you should cultivate a mind of joy and gratitude. Cultivate the mind of a parent who cares for everything as if that thing or person were their child with respect and kindness. To cultivate equanimity and stability. And Dogen says one of the ways we do this is by taking the broadest perspective. So we pull back when we want to reject. We pull back when we want to reject that person or their view and try to take a broader perspective. And then he ends by reminding us that this wisdom is cultivated through the experiences of our unique life. We can only cultivate this practice through the vehicle of our life. There is no other life. There is no other person who can cultivate this practice but ourselves, within ourselves. We have help, right? We have Sangha, we have Dharma. But it is our life that teaches us about our life, that teaches us about the Dharma. So for this reason, we join with all beings in taking refuge in the example of the ancestors who came before us and the wisdom that they offer. We take refuge in the teachings, and we take refuge in our community. We take refuge in our efforts that we make together. We take refuge in this particular community. We take refuge in the communities that radiate out from our life. Santa Cruz, we take refuge in that community. We take refuge in the things around us, the world we live in, and the environment that sustains us. It is in this refuge, in this gratitude, that we find joy, that we enact this parental mind, and we cultivate our stability. So this cultivation, this joy, this parental mind is not outside of our life, but fully immersed and intimate with our life and all of life that surrounds us. So this is how we sustain the way. We do it together, supporting each other through our individual effort. Thank you very much.